It's good to have you back with us visiting. We're glad to have all of you who are visiting among us today. This is one of our happy, happy days. We always have happy days every Lord's Day, but when you visit with us and bless us with your presence, it always makes it better. We've been noticing, especially last Sunday and today and next Sunday, we're going to be noticing the Christian's combat, the confrontation that we are engaged in the world. Ordinarily, I don't like to quote a source that's 7 or 8 or 10 years old, but I'm going to quote one today that is, and the quoting of it, actually, it being that old, simply underlines the appropriateness of the observation that was made some 8 or 10 years ago. I'm quoting from Time magazine. An article was written, and the quote is this: gloom hung thick over the group of 100 prominent intellectuals assembled in Manhattan at a theater for ideas. The question for discussion was, is this the end of the rationalist tradition? And the answer seemed obvious. Pronounced poet Robert Lowell said, the world is absolutely out of control now, and it's not going to be saved by reason or unreason. Norman Mailer intoned, somewhere something incredibly wrong or something incredible happened in history. The wrong guys won. Now that was spoken 8 or 10 years ago. It was a report on this group of 100 intellectuals who met to examine if perhaps the rationalist era, and that means in opposition to an era governed by divine revelation, is that era perhaps ending? And they said, yes, it is. But look at the effect that it's had. The world is absolutely out of control now, and it's not going to be saved by reason or unreason. I wonder what these men would say now, 10 years later. As we've seen 10 years of documentation, the world really is out of control, absolutely. I don't expect the forces of good to ever, in our age or ever while we're on earth, to replace the forces of evil on earth. In fact, in the book of Revelation, chapter 20, the picture is given there of the forces of evil absolutely coming up across the entire breadth of the earth and encompassing the city of God. That's Revelation 20, verses 7 through 9a. As long as we are here, however, as hopeless as the task may appear, and as slim as our chances may look, we're going to have to keep on doing what God set us here to do. We're going to have to keep on extending the work of Jesus Christ. He came to destroy the works of Satan. And it may be that all we can do is do what the little lady did during, I think, the war between the states, when she rushed out of her home against the opposing forces with a broom in her hand, and someone says, what are you doing? That won't do any good. She said, well, at least they'll know which side I'm on. And that may be what we'll have to do. But in spite of that fact, let's be encouraged by verses 9b and 10 of Revelation 20, after it says that the forces of Satan were gathered for battle, their number like the sand of the sea, and they marched up over the broad earth and surrounded the camp of the saints and the beloved city. Listen to this encouragement. But fire came down from heaven and consumed them, and the devil who had deceived them was thrown into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet were, and they will be tormented day and night forever and forever. You see, the marching up of the forces of Satan around the camp of the saints and surrounding the beloved city, that threat is not the last scene of history. The last scene of history is an intervention by God Himself, where He comes and takes charge personally, and with a show of fire and with a show of power, comes in and simply rescues those who have placed their trust in the Lord Jesus Christ. He lifts them out of their imminent danger. He preserves them and takes them to himself. He then banishes these forces of evil. He banishes Satan, who is the instigator of it. And then he banishes also these people who have been deceived by Satan. Everybody that's in the world tonight that's evil is not evil intentionally. They are evil because they've been deceived. And consequently, they're being used as the instruments of Satan to accomplish his terrible work. But let me say this today. We've come to a parting of the ways. As far as I'm concerned, I am at a parting of the ways with that which is considered to be normal American living. I don't think that a person can live like the average American person today and still be a Christian. There has come a time that we're going to have a parting of the ways. Turn quickly to Ephesians, the 4th chapter and the 5th chapter. We're going to be working out of there this morning. I want to read verses 17 through 20. Now this I affirm and testify in the Lord that you must no longer live as the Gentiles do in the futility of their minds. They are darkened in their understanding, alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them. Due to their hardness of heart, they have become callous and have given themselves up to licentiousness, greedy to practice every kind of uncleanness. You did not so learn Christ. But he says here that there has come the time when, as Christian people, you must take a stand to no longer live like the heathen live. The heathen, the word here, as the translated the Gentiles here, it's the word Gentile, but that must be simply understood as the people in the world in any country. Let's not be confused by the word Gentile. That's almost a nondescript term. I can't identify with it. Do you know who the Gentiles are in this passage here? They're the average American person. They are the average person in America who is living under the domination of Satan. That's who the Gentile is. And he says here, we must no longer live like that. Listen, the sooner we accept the fact that we're not any longer living in a nation that is committed to Christian principles, the sooner we will establish our identity as Christians. You can't identify yourself with practically anything that's being done and accepted from the top down or from the bottom up in America and still expect to establish or maintain your identity as a Christian. And the sooner we recognize that we're living in a country that is no longer either publicly or privately committed to upholding the laws of God, the sooner we'll establish our identity as Christian people. The modern Jew has a motto. The modern Jew's motto is this, two words, never again, never again. And you know what they're talking about. You'll never do to us again what you did to us in the Second World War. Never again. I maintain that the Christian today in this modern age, we also need a motto. No longer. No longer. No longer will I live like the people around me are living. I can't afford to. No longer will I get my identity by saying, well, everybody else is doing it. I'll do it too. Young people, you can't use that excuse anymore. Let's simply adopt this as our motto. No longer. No longer. No longer. But in order to take such a stand as that, you're going to have a change of mind. I'm going to have a solidification of a mental set, a mindset. We must be a people prepared in mind with our heads on right. We talk about young people and the expression they use, I'm trying to get my head on right. All right, we all need to get our heads on right. Look at Ephesians, the 4th chapter again. Just drop down there to verses 22, 23, and 24. Listen to what he says. Put off your old nature, which belongs to your former lusts or former manner of life, and is corrupt through deceitful lusts, and be renewed in the spirit of your minds, and put on the new nature, created after the likeness of God in true righteousness and holiness. Standing in between these as the pivot point between putting off the old nature and putting on the new nature is this admonition, this instruction by Paul, be renewed in the spirit of your minds. There's where the battle will be won or lost. We must be a people who discern the times. Look over in chapter 5, verses 15 and 16. He prefaces this instruction in verse 15 with verse 14. He says, therefore it is said, awake, O sleeper, and arise from the dead, and Christ will give you light. But then look at the conclusion based upon this. Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of the time, because the days are evil. Now that was spoken obviously of the first century society, yes. But I'm convinced that we are surpassing the first century society. The first century society was slowed down. They were impeded in their degradation because of a lack of communication. Today, because of the increased amount of communication and the increased or the decreased amount of time necessary to accomplish it, we're going from bad to worse at a rapid clip, and I don't know of anything that can stop it except the coming of the Lord Jesus Christ. I'm convinced that we're on the verge of having had it. But listen, we must set our minds as to where we are. Have we got our heads on right? Let me read something. I'm going to read a composite summation of several historical conclusions drawn by historians of the first century. Not historians who lived then, but historians who have written of that time. And then I'm going to make an application. Listen to this. All ranks of Roman society were infected with the prevailing impurity. Vices which may not even be named were practiced with impunity. Slavery encouraged sensual indulgence. Infanticide was freely tolerated and practiced. In the Roman stage, circus, and amphitheater, the degradation of morals was most apparent. That's by George Park Fisher. Again, another quote, divorce was coming to be looked upon with utmost indifference. The loss of belief in the old religion and the growing laxity of morals led to an extraordinary freedom of divorce. No remedy was found for a disorder so universal. Now that was a description of the first century. I want to substitute some words. Substitute American for Roman. Substitute the female workforce for slaves. Substitute abortion for infanticide. Substitute the American stage and the pop rock recording industry for the Roman stage. And you find the same freedom of divorce as then. Plus you've got alcoholism, drugs, you've got spiraling crime, you've got the mafia. But let me just insert these real quickly. All ranks of American society were infected with the prevailing impurity. Vices which may not even be named were practiced, are practiced without or with impunity. The woman or the female workforce is encouraging sensual indulgence. And if you want me to elaborate on that, let me just say I'm talking about the upper crust and the lower crust. The day that the female invaded the male workforce, and I'm not against it as the principal particularly, but you put secretaries in the offices of unscrupulous men, and the unscrupulous men are going to be taking every single advantage of that female, and it's going to encourage immorality. And our immoral spiral has gone out of the roof. It's absolutely gone off the page. And it's having the same effect today that the availability of female slaves had in the first century. Now, you may think I'm crazy. Check history and check the present day scene. Abortion is freely tolerated and practiced. In the American stage, the rock recording industry, the degradation of morals is most apparent. Divorce is coming to be looked upon with utmost indifference. The loss of belief in the old religion and the growing laxity of morals is leading to an extraordinary freedom of divorce. No remedy is found for such a disorder so universal. If you don't believe that, let me read from just last week's U.S. News and World Report. A flood of X-rated music hits the airwaves, concert halls, and record shops. America is spending billions of dollars upon this trash. Our own Christian young people are spending multiplied millions of dollars upon trash. Listen, hot-selling songs with sexuality or sexually explicit lyrics are moving up on the charts, a brand of singing that once was unheard in polite society is producing all-time profits. At the heart of the furor is a wave of new songs that are sexually explicit and often express street language. Unlike X-rated movies and books, this music is broadcast, performed in concerts, and available on records to any listener, regardless of age. Just turn on the radio and let some disc jockey or some hyper drug addict who has a gift at strumming a guitar and disrobing himself, let him feed your mind. Just indiscriminately turn on the radio, and you can get it in the student center. You can get it in your dorm rooms. You can get it in your home rooms at home. You just let them feed you. That's precisely what's happening. And I don't know when we're going to wake up. Jesus here through Paul says, wake up. Wake out of sleep. What in the world is happening to us? And you can add to all of this a real touch of respectability. Because in the recent issue of the Phi Delta Kappan, a prestigious publication by higher education, on the front of it, it says heterosexual bigots, and then they tell us where to go. Five of the articles, the major articles in the magazine, four of those major articles are in favor or lean toward homosexuality being allowed and encouraged among teachers in schools. One article out of the five spoke out against it. Now, that's one of the most prestigious publications among our higher education today. Wake up. You cannot any longer say, well, I'm a part of this or that. I don't think you can and endorse it. We're going to have to be geared for confrontation. And I think it's high time we woke up and recognized that the devil is alive and well, and we need to recognize it. Your mind is going to have to be set right. You're going to have to identify the times. Get your head out of the sand. And I'm talking as much to me as I am to you. I don't like to look at it either. I'd rather put my head in the sand and go on about my business and preach on subjects here that don't touch anybody within 1,000 miles. I don't really like to do that, but somebody said, well, you can do it and not get into any trouble. Why don't you preach on the Muslims? There's not one within 1,000 miles. We're going to have to stand firm in our attitude. Yes, we're being confronted by it. Yes, we're looking at it. But the important part is, what is our attitude toward it? It's here that the battle will be lost or won, depending upon our attitude toward this sort of thing. Look at verses 5 and 6 in chapter 5 of Ephesians. Listen to this attitude expressed. Be sure of this, that no immoral or impure man or one who is covetous, that is an idolater, has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. Let no one deceive you with empty words, for it is because of these things that the wrath of God is coming upon the sons of disobedience. Quickly flip to 1 Corinthians. And you'll find the same attitude there. 1 Corinthians, the 6th chapter, says, let no man deceive you. Neither idolaters, nor adulterers, nor homosexuals, nor thieves, nor greedy, nor drunkards, nor revilers, nor robbers will inherit the kingdom of God. What is our attitude? Your attitude will determine your actions. My attitude will determine my actions. The outcome of sin's threat depends upon the attitude that Christian people have towards sin. Our generation is being brainwashed. Young people, you're in the midst of being manipulated and brainwashed. That's right. And they do it so subtly. They do it with a word here and a song here and a lyric there. And then finally they get you to wallowing in this pig pen. And they do it then with a TV show and a radio program. And then a publication from some prestigious educational organ. And then on and on and on you go. And Steve said it were it not for his background in Christian education, he didn't know whether he could stand up under the pressures of medical training or not. He told me that just 5 or 10 minutes ago. He didn't know whether he could stand up under it or not. He said there is a total void. There is a vacuum when it comes to God. There is just simply not anything there. What's your attitude toward it? Someone said very aptly, vice is a monster of so great mien But to be hated is but to be seen. But seen too often, familiar with her face, we first pity, then endure, then embrace. Words are spoken on my TV set in my own home today, which 5 years ago I would not have allowed to be spoken in the presence of my children. Well, you say, why don't you get up and turn it off? I'm trying. But you keep thinking, well, maybe it'll improve. But they don't care whether you get up and turn it off or not right then. They've already got it into you. And the next time, you'll wait 10 more minutes before you turn it off. Isaiah said, woe to those that call good evil and evil good. And not doing anything about evil is just one simple step away from doing exactly what Isaiah was talking about. God's attitude towards sin is wrath. Don't let anybody deceive you. It's because of these things that the wrath of God is coming. Well, let me ask then, do we dare, once God has pronounced his anathema upon any attitude or action, do we dare then wink at it or walk away from it unconcerned? Let me read you something. If you want to be shocked, turn back to Ezekiel chapter 9, verses 4 through 7. Ezekiel 9, 4 through 7. Listen to how God dealt with it among the Jews. And the Lord said to him, go through the city, through Jerusalem. You could translate that Circe. Sure. Why do you think all of you have come here this weekend? You've come back on a pilgrimage. You've come back to Jerusalem. All right? Go through the streets, through Circe. Well, let's just read it, Jerusalem. But that, you get the point. And put a mark upon the foreheads of the men who sigh and groan over all the abominations that are committed in it. And to the others, he said, in my hearing, pass through the city after him and smite. Your eye shall not spare. You shall show no pity. Slay old men outright, young men, maidens, little children, and women. But touch no one upon whom is the mark. And begin at my sanctuary. Translate that into today. Begin at the church. Begin with the church. And listen to where they began. So they began with the elders who were before the house. They didn't start with the young people. Why? Because the young people aren't the ones responsible for it. They started with the old people. They started with the elders. They started with those people who, as older people, did not show the proper disdain for the ungodliness that was practiced among them in that camp or in that city. He said, you start with those elders. Start with my church. Don't go out here and kill the world. They're guilty too. But the ones who are most guilty for allowing it to happen are those people who showed no disdain at all, who showed no shock, who showed no remorse. He said, you start with them. And then we're brought abruptly into Mark, the 8th chapter, in verse 38, where Jesus said, I tell you, whoever's ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and evil generation, I'm going to be ashamed of him when I stand before my Father. I'm going to be ashamed of him before my Father. I'm going to deny him before the Father and before the angels. I don't know whether we can be embarrassed anymore. I don't know whether there's a song that can be sung that the average member of the church among our young people would be shocked at. I'm serious. And those of you who are shocked at it are not the average members. Those of you who are shocked at it are not the average teenager. And you can stop me if you think I'm wrong, but I'm beginning to believe that the average teenager among the churches of Christ have no more discernment about the kind of music that's proper than somebody in the world. And we are literally being drugged into the gutter because of what we're hearing, whether it's consciously or unconsciously, we're being drugged into the gutter. And then you raise an outcry about the immorality that's in the singing and the music and all that goes with it, and an outcry about the movies and an outcry about the pornography. Raise a cry about that. And you'll hear an outcry from some who are engaged in it. We're going to have to get our heads on right. The time has come for confrontation. Listen, I'm not trying to save America. I do want dead level best to save Americans. And it may be that we'll have to take a national action just to simply save people. Shall we do it or not? You say, well, we're not engaged. That's political. It's hogwash. It's not political as far as I'm concerned. I'm thinking about the little babies, my own girls, my own sons. I'm thinking about your little boys and girls that are going to be raised in a totally atheistic America, a totally abandoned America to principles that absolutely would have shocked you 10 years ago. I'm thinking about them. When I oppose those who endorse homosexuality, when I oppose those people who would destroy our public educational system, and it's already gone down the drain. Circe is an exception to the rule. 1 out of 1,000. The rest of it's gone. The Deweyism that has been prevalent for the last 50 years has already swept our public school system down in the drain. It's already gone. We're going to have to take some united action of people whose actions. All right, first of all, get your head on right. You're going to have to discern the times, and then having looked at those times and having discerned them, you're going to have to stand firm and not let her face become so familiar to you that you first pity it and then endure it and then end up embracing it. Look at verses in chapter 5 again of Ephesians. Listen to this. He simply spells it out. Look at verse 7 of chapter 5. He tells you what to do about it. Just before that, he said, I want you to know what to think about it. He said, I want you to know that God's wrath is coming because of it. And don't let anybody deceive you with empty words. Get your head on right. But then second, he says what to do about it. Verse 7. Therefore, do not associate with them. With them here is in the dative case. It is in the genitive case, meaning the people involved. And association means endorsement. Don't associate with those people in such a way that you would endorse what they're doing. Evil companionship still corrupt good morals. And young people, that has always held true. Older people, that's always held true. Evil companionships do corrupt good morals. He says here, do not associate with them. Secondly, in verse 11a, he says, take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness. Take no part in them. That's in the dative case, and it refers to the sins that they are engaged in. He says, don't take any part in them. And that simply means everything imaginable. You can make out your own list. Here are a few. Lewd, filthy films. Don't go see them, and don't encourage anybody else to do it. Pornographic books and magazines. Don't buy or sell them. Degrading music by degraded musicians. Don't buy it or borrow it or listen to it. Nor recommend it. Nor mimic them. Nor the materialism, the covetousness, the greed, the hypocrisy of the older generation. Nor the blindness and the sins and the naivete, perhaps, of the younger generation that just rush headlong after the nearest and most recent TV idol or music idol. Don't have anything to do with it. Take no part in them. And then thirdly, he says, expose them. Expose them, yep. Instead, expose them. That's 5:11b. He's simply saying here, speak out. How many of you know of someone on campus who is using drugs? Are you ignoring him? Are you endorsing him? Or are you exposing him? The Lord says expose him. Do it in the way to save his soul if possible. Do you know somebody that's selling drugs? Expose him. Oh, but I can't bring myself. You'd better do it. The Lord Jesus Christ is going to come and ask you some questions at the end of the time, and he's going to ask me some too. You'd better go to that person and say, listen, if it's not stopped, I'm going to report you. Have you ever done that? Have you ever spoken out against it? We better start speaking. Have nothing to do with them. Do not associate with them. Don't take any part with them. Instead, expose them. How vocal are you in your stand? Next Sunday morning, I'm going to be talking about a mindset that's absolutely got us hamstrung. We're going to have to take a different mindset. Turn quickly to Philippians, the next chapter, the next book. And I'll come to a close with this observation. Philippians 3:27-30. Philippians 2:27-30. Pardon me, let's go again. Philippians 1, would you believe? Philippians 1. 27 through 30. Only let your manner of life be worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or am absent, I may hear of you, that you stand firm in one spirit, with one mind, striving side by side for the faith of the gospel, and not frightened in anything by your opponents. This is a clear omen to them of their destruction, but of your salvation, and that from God. For it has been granted to you that for the sake of Christ you should not only believe in him, but also suffer for his sake, engaged in the same conflict which you saw and now hear to be mine. Oh, listen there. He talks about standing firm. He talks about opponents. He talks about conflict. But I'd like to say something here. This was not addressed just to Christian women. It seems like that the only people that ever raise a real outcry against ungodliness are our Christian women. Gentlemen, I think when he says here that you're standing side by side, it ought to be men and women. And don't put off on the women's shoulders that which should be done by the men. Stand up and speak. And if you'll notice back in Ezekiel 7, where we just quoted from a moment ago, if you'll notice back there, Ezekiel 9, he said, go by and put a mark on the men who are mourning and who are grieving over the ungodliness. The men. I'll tell you what, as I look at myself and I look at our brethren and as I look at the movement around the world, whenever some outcry is made against the textbooks in our public schools generally and how they've been invaded, when I see who's making the outcry against pornography, 4 years ago it was a woman. And you mark it down, the majority of times in our own society, in the church, when you find somebody standing up and doing something about it, you know who it'll be? It'll be some little Christian woman. And I say that to my shame as a man. Let's wake up out of our sleep. This is our task. Flip back quickly to Ephesians, the 6th chapter. Finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Put on the whole armor of God. That's chapter 6 and verse 10. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil, for we're not contending against flesh and blood, but against the principalities, against the powers, against the world rulers of this present darkness, against the spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. Therefore, take the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand, to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Brethren, that's our task. I know it. I'd rather not do it. But if you don't do it, we're going to be completely inundated. If we do it, I think we're going to be completely inundated anyway. But at least Jesus Christ will know whose side we're on. And don't think that doesn't count. He says, if you're ashamed of me or of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, I'm going to be ashamed of you. I don't want that to happen. Let's stand up and take our place. Will you stand and encourage one another while we sing?